Hello and welcome to another episode of Soccer Pints, your one-stop shop for all things American soccer. I'm your host, Will Clark. If you aren't familiar, Soccer Pints is an American soccer podcast where we have pointed discussions about U.S. soccer, Americans abroad, Major League Soccer, and many other exciting topics. From time to time, I will be joined by guest hosts, as well as conduct interviews with some of the biggest influencers in American soccer. Last week was a great one, as not only did we have our first ever live chat on Twitter, but we also covered a lot of information in our episode, including highlights from the chat. We also previewed the U.S. men's first friendly that took place on Wednesday night against Morocco and gave a quick recap into the U.S. Open Cup round of 16 matches. Finally, we finished off by answering even more questions, and I gave my final thoughts of the week. This week, we have even more information to cover as we will talk about the match against Morocco, who stood out, who underperformed, and ultimately, what we should take away from this friendly. In addition, we have a quick turnaround as we now have our second friendly taking place this Sunday, June 5th against Uruguay, and I'll preview what to expect in that one as well. As always, I will wrap up with some Q&A and my final thoughts of the week. And once again, I have a great brewery to feature this week. Given that this past Monday was Memorial Day, where we could give our proper respects and remembrance for all of the sacrifices that our military servicemen and women have given for us, I thought it was only right to feature a brewery that is owned by former military individuals. Salty Turtle Beer Company, based out of Surf City, North Carolina, was founded by former United States Marines Daniel Callender and Dean Kelly, along with their business partner Zach White. Beginning in 2017, the trio have been serving up some of the best pints that you can find in the Surf City Topsail community. And fortunately for me today, I'm drinking one of the OGs that helped put this brewery on the map. This beer is called Coastline, and it's a German-style Kölsch ale. It is light, clean, crisp, a little fruity, and it's 6% in alcohol. I know I'm usually drinking IPAs on here, but this is the perfect beer on a warm, hot day, and it's just really well made. Not only does Salty Turtle have a great variety of beers on tap, but one of my favorite things about them is how much they give back to their community. They support our veterans, they support the environment, and it's an incredibly family and pet-friendly place. The people who design all of their logos, merchandise, labels, etc. have done such an amazing job too, as I always find myself walking out with some type of new gear, and of course, their to-go beer. So thank you to Salty Turtle Beer Company for letting me feature you today. Thank you to Daniel and Dean for your service. And to anyone that plans on being in the North Carolina coast this summer, this is a must visit to make on your way out to the beach. Well, obviously we had our first summer friendly against Morocco on Wednesday night in Cincinnati. But before I hop into that topic, I want to give a congratulations out to one of my guest hosts who joined in the live chat last week. I highlighted Brian Edwards as the Charlotte FC Academy goalkeeping coach, but earlier this week, Brian was promoted to the interim goalkeeping coach for Charlotte FC's first team. It's an extraordinary honor for him to be elevated to work with the MLS franchise, and even cooler for his friends like myself to be able to share his accomplishment and success with the program. He gave such great insight on the live chat about MLS Academy structures, his thoughts on potential promotion relegation in the U.S., and also agreed with me that he believes Charlotte FC will make the playoffs in their expansion season. So now he gets to help bring that prediction to life, and knowing what I know about Brian, he will help the current group of goalkeepers as well as be a true leader for all of the squad members in the locker room. So congrats again to Brian. I know he's going to be incredibly busy for the remainder of the season, but we'll try to get him back on the show again soon. And if you see him out in Charlotte or on the road, be sure to buy him a pint to celebrate as well. So, Wednesday night finally arrived for the fans and players to be able to witness the summer edition of the U.S. men's national team play in their first friendly and first match since March together. Greg had named a 27-man roster, but that was trimmed down to 26 earlier this week when Jordi Mihaljevic was forced to withdraw from camp due to an ankle injury. It's really unfortunate for Jordi, as he had been somebody highlighted week after week on here and was looking to break through in this camp. Greg decided not to replace him and to just move forward with the remaining squad. And in non-typical Greg fashion, he decided to release his starting lineup a day early, when usually we get to find out about an hour before kickoff and complain about it. We got an entire 24 hours to overanalyze and moan about the choices this time. So, in goal, Greg went with Matt Turner, who was expected to start after Zach Steffen was unable to join camp. In defense, he chose Reggie Cannon on the right, Anthony Robinson on the left, and MLS regulars Walker Zimmerman and Aaron Long in the center. In midfield, he chose Tyler Adams, Yunus Musa, and Brendan Aaronson. And up top, he chose Christian Pulisic, Jesus Ferreira, and Timothy Weah. Really, the only surprises were Long in the center of defense. Maybe Cannon too, but overall, I thought it made the most sense. Weston McKennie is still working on his fitness and wasn't expected to start. We could argue that some of the new prospects in camp like Haji Wright, Joe Scaley, or Malik Tillman should have been out there. But I wasn't ready to scream and yell about it like other fans who seemed to spend their entire day on social media doing just that. The match started with the U.S. on the front foot, and they were lively in the first 10 minutes, showing great pressure, good passing combinations together, and tackling strong. Ferreira nearly scored 2 minutes into the match and forced an excellent diving save from the Moroccan goalkeeper. But then we had a couple of defensive lapses and forced Matt Turner into making a couple of excellent saves himself. Turner looked incredibly confident. He distributed the ball well with his feet and overall did exactly what he needed to do, especially with a backline that looked a little shaky early on. We had Robinson playing in a more advanced attacking role than his usual left back role, so it left the defense exposed at times and they were vulnerable, which put others at risk of being out of position, and that led to the Moroccan chances. But then the game opened up after Pulisic took a long ball from Zimmerman and made an exquisite first touch. He stayed composed while controlling it. He cut back on a defender, laid a perfect ball into the path of Aronson, who made nearly a 45-yard sprint into the box to slam the ball into the back of the net for a 1-0 lead. Shortly thereafter, Wade took a pass from about 25 yards out, took one touch, fired the ball in towards the net. It was an absolute rocket, and while it ended up in the back of the net for a 2-0 lead, the goalkeeper should have done better. But what a strong effort by Wade, and he continues to be growing into his game and showing the dynamic abilities that we've been hoping to see from him. In the final minute of the half, Ferreira nearly made it 3-0, but forced another excellent save from the Moroccan goalkeeper, and we went into half with a 2-0 lead. After the first half, I felt we looked confident. We were creative on the attack. We had a great understanding between each other. We knew where we needed to be, where our teammates needed to be. We were playing through the middle, we were stretching Morocco, we used our pace, and aside from a few moments, we had one of the better halves of soccer that I've seen out of this team for a long time. A few takeaways I had from the first 45 minutes were that Musa looked really quick. He was opening things up on the pitch. He was just a different element out there. He seemed smooth, seemed so confident and smart with his play, and coming into the match, I had said he might have a battle on his hands to retain a starting spot, but in watching him out there, he looked irreplaceable. I thought Long looked a step slow. He was out of position a few times, causing Adams to have to cover and be out of position himself, and I just thought he looked average. However, I felt anyone that thought Zimmerman didn't belong back there is absolutely wrong. He was a solid force back there, and his distribution from the back was strong as well, which most people claim is a weak part of his game. Now, this may be a really unpopular take, but I also thought Adams didn't look great defensively. Again, maybe that had to do with what was behind him, but he was beaten a few times. He didn't have a poor half by any means, and he made a couple of good tackles and passed the ball well, but given that he hasn't been playing as regularly at the club level, could someone potentially force him into a substitute role? It's extremely doubtful, but we've seen someone like Kellen Acosta play very well as a six when he's been called upon. So, Greg made three changes at half, as was his initial plan coming into the match, and we saw the debuts of Wright and Scaley and the return of Cameron Carter-Vickers, who came on for Ferreira, Robinson, and Zimmerman, respectively. Wright almost had a dream debut with his second touch of the game and nearly scored a goal. He looked like a true number nine out there, and he's a massive individual. He's faster than I expected, too. I thought he looked like the real deal, and granted, it was a small sample size. I really liked his combination play and familiarity with Pulisic and some of the other guys. What I did notice, both in the first half and that continued early in the second half, was the poor corner kick set pieces we had. It seemed every single one was overhit back post. Now, whether that was the plan or we just couldn't convert them, or if Greg doesn't want to show our main set plays, it was noticeably bad. But as play went on, we saw Wright make a great run in on a through ball that led to a great shot by Aronson. His shot was rebounded down to Pulisic, who took a touch and was fouled hard to the ground for a penalty kick. Pulisic, who normally takes all of the PK attempts during matches, decided to make the gesture of the night and handed the ball to Wright to step up to try to score on his debut. And sure enough, on his international debut, Wright converts the penalty for his first international goal and a 3-0 lead. After this goal, Tillman subbed on for Pulisic and Luca De La Torre came on for Adams. About 5 minutes later, we saw the introduction of McKinney, who came on for Aronson. Aaronson really stood out to me in the center mid role on the night. It was good to see McKinney come on and return to the fold, but I was left after the match amazed at the predicament Greg has on his hands with the talent and depth and the fight for spots we currently have. I don't ever remember as many skilled technical players battling for spots on this team. It's going to be so tough for everyone to get playing time and force their way onto the field. And while Tillman forced the goalkeeper into a great save, seemingly out of nowhere, there wasn't much out of him overall. He looked good when he did have possession, but just had limited touches. I would definitely like to see more minutes for him in the next couple of matches. Scaly was whistled for a PK on a phantom foul call in the box. He didn't touch the Moroccan player, but the ref whistled for the foul anyways. However, justice was served when Morocco smacked their shot off the crossbar to keep the shutout for the Americans. Continuing to speak about the subs here, De La Torre never loses the ball. He is always so tight with his dribbling, keeps the ball so close to his body, smart with his possession, and his passing. Not much in the night for him, but once again, another impressive performance when he was on the pitch. There wasn't enough to really evaluate Carter Vickers, but then again, as a center back, the more your name isn't spoken about, the better. Distribution looked good from him, his positioning was solid when needed, but he's another I would like to get more minutes to truly get a feel for how he fits into this team. Now, there were a few guys who I felt didn't take advantage of their opportunity, and that was Cannon, Long, and Scaly. All defenders, so you can see a theme here, and there was nothing truly negative with them, but also nothing that wowed me either. Nothing that made me say, if they weren't in the squad, we'd be in trouble. However, of note with this observation, when Pulisic was subbed off, he handed his captain's armband to Long, so take that for what it's worth. Overall, though, a super impressive performance by the U.S. men's national team and a lot of positives to be taken away from the match. My five biggest takeaways from the friendly were as follows and in no particular order. Turner is the unquestioned number one goalkeeper. Weah, Pulisic, Aaronson, and Musa have to be on the field together. Our attacking midfield options are deep and crowded. Haji Wright looks the part. And we played on the front foot the entire match and took it to Morocco. Now, I also have three things that remain to be seen heading into the next friendly and Nations League matches, and again, in no particular order. The center back partner to Zimmerman still remains unclear. Backups at the outside defensive spots are up for grabs. And do we play with a false nine or a true nine, given the amount of attacking midfield options we have? So, next up is our final summer friendly against Uruguay this Sunday, June 3rd at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. They will be playing the match in Kansas City, and it should be a much different style of opponent than what we just saw with Morocco. They will present some challenges for us defensively that we will need to get sorted out, since that was the most glaring issue witnessed during the Moroccan match. So, let's dive into the next friendly to see what we can expect. And once again, I really don't have many expectations coming into this match either. It's another excellent chance for us against an even higher quality opponent that will give this group more experience and will allow us to try different tactics that we will need to utilize in the future. Whether Morocco just underperformed or we just completely dominated them, Uruguay will be a much different story. Uruguay finished third in their own World Cup qualifying table, finishing only behind Brazil and Argentina. Typically, Uruguay plays with an open playing style, and like the US, they can get exposed at times. In 18 games during qualifying, they only scored 22 goals while giving up 22 goals. So, this isn't necessarily the potent attacking-led style Uruguay of the past with players in their primes like Luis Suarez or Edison Cavani and Diego Forlan or other former players, but they do still have a lot of talent, a lot of potential in their own right. And they do still have a 34-year-old Edison Cavani on the roster. They also have up-and-coming stars Darwin Nunez, Ronald Arroyo, and Diego Rossi in their camp, so the U.S. will be tested much more in this one. Uruguay is in a challenging group for the World Cup themselves, with Portugal, Ghana, and South Korea as opponents. They also played Mexico in a friendly on Thursday night and completely dominated the Mexicans 3-0, with Cavani scoring two of their goals. And they played primarily their strongest squad. So, given a short turnaround to play against us, I do expect them to have some rotation of players that are trying to earn their own places for the World Cup. And speaking of rotation, that's exactly what I expect to see from Greg on Sunday. We saw a lot of progression from the squad on Wednesday night. He tried out a few different tactics, some that worked really well and some that got us exposed a bit. We made some substitutions to change things up, and I think the squad gained a lot of confidence with their playmaking, their possession, and with the ability to break the Moroccans down. If we can make a few changes to the starting 11 and let others get a chance to showcase themselves, I think that would be ideal for evaluation purposes. So, who would I like to see in the starting lineup on Sunday night? I mentioned for Morocco, I wanted to see the best 11 on the field that we could possibly put out, and I think for the most part we did that with what we had. I think we should now look to bring in new faces that didn't log a lot of minutes and continue to integrate others into the mix. So, in goal, I would let Ethan Horvath get the start Sunday. At right back, I would like to see Scaley in his natural position. At left back, I'd like to see George Bello. At the center back positions, I want to see Cameron Carter-Vickers and Eric Palmer-Brown get some time together. In the midfield, I would like to see De La Torre, Musa, and McKinney. And then up front, put Tillman, Wright, and Paul Areola. So again, a 4-3-3 type of formation, which seems to be what we typically line up in. But the way Greg moved everyone around was really impressive on Wednesday night. It allowed for a lot of flexibility in player movements, spacing, and gave us the opportunity to pull some strings in the middle of the field. Now, I know this lineup leaves out a lot of our stronger options and regulars, but I think they all prove their value and worth, and I don't see much benefit into putting more minutes on their legs right now. Greg knows he has about 19 to 20 places on the 26-man roster already guaranteed. Unless injuries happen, of course, so he needs to use this last friendly as an opportunity to see what others have together against a strong opponent. Nothing against Grenada or El Salvador that we'll play later this month, but those aren't real tests for us. If we did roll out a lineup like this, I would expect a lot of mistakes, since there might not be as much familiarity with each other, but we still have a core group in the midfield to help control the team in spacing. In transparency, I don't expect Greg to make this kind of complete overhaul or adjustment in this friendly. I think he saves the wholesale changes for the Nations League games, but I prefer him to go this route after the performance we witnessed on Wednesday night from everyone. So, will I be upset if we lose this one? Not at all. Will I put much stock into the performance? Not really. Did they exceed my expectations on Wednesday night, and would I like for them to do it again on Sunday? Absolutely. I expect it to be another good test for us, and I think we will see the game open up more, and there will be opportunities for both sides to score goals. I'm going with a 2-2 draw in this one. I think Haji Wright gets his second goal in as many appearances, and I think we see a substitute net one as well in the second half. Well, let me take a quick sip of this coastline from Salty Turtle, and then I'm going to jump into some questions we had this week. And I'm getting a lot more engagement from folks on social media that I don't know personally, but it's much appreciated, and there's been some really good questions being thrown my way, especially from folks trying to learn more about soccer overall. So while I can't answer them all on here, here are some of the top ones that have been asked. Did you see Christian Pulisic call out Americans for not giving support in Cincinnati at the game? What'd you think of his comment? And yes, I saw the interview post-game on the field, and I believe his exact words were, "I'm not super happy with the amount of Americans here." Now, he wasn't saying Americans as in someone's country they identify with. He meant supporters of the U.S. men's national team. And I have a couple of thoughts to his comment. First off, I loved it. I respect it. I think he's absolutely correct with being honest about it and making sure he, as the captain of the team, lets people know he wants a pro U.S. men's national team crowd at every stadium that we play in. Secondly, I thought he directed the comment at the fans rather than who he should have directed it to, and that's the U.S. Soccer Federation specifically. They decided to select Cincinnati as the location for one of the last send-off friendlies before the squad goes to the World Cup, and there were a lot of empty seats. I think I saw only 20,000 out of 26,000 in the stands. And there were a lot of Moroccans in the crowd as well. It's not the fans' fault for not attending the match. The U.S. Soccer Federation put an absurd price tag on the tickets, and that makes it difficult for a lot of supporters to attend. So I know there are a lot of American outlaws out there that were upset with this comment and felt slighted by it because they support this team through and through. But I don't think the intent was directed at any fans specifically. We need the U.S. Soccer Federation to stop trying to capitalize as much as they can and focus on creating an atmosphere as pro-U.S. men's national team as possible. It would generate a lot more interest in attending these matches, traveling to these matches, and seeing the best players the U.S. has produced on a field. So, it's the right comment directed at the wrong people, and I'm sure Pulisic will have to clarify those comments very soon or received a talking to by the powers that be, but as the face of this team, I appreciate him coming out and saying what we have all felt for a long time. Next question this week. Is there anyone you haven't mentioned that might be called into September's camp and earn a roster spot on the World Cup team? And short answer here, no. I think the entire talent pool has already been determined, and the chances of anyone not mentioned so far during qualifying and or in this summer camp are slim to none. I said Greg has 19 to 20 players that have all but booked a ticket so far. Those final 6 to 7 spots will be determined through this camp and through any injuries once club seasons start back up. If there's a name out there that I haven't mentioned or I'm not aware of, I'd be really surprised for this cycle. Final question this week, are you ever going to talk about the U.S. women's team or only the men? And I've been waiting for someone to throw this one out there. It's been a busy few weeks with the U.S. men leading up to this summer camp, and obviously, being a men's World Cup year, the focus is mainly there. The women have a few friendlies coming up later in June, and then they have their CONCACAF Women's Championship in July, which if they win, they'll qualify for the 2024 Olympics as well. So, more to come on the women's team later this summer, but as I am very open and transparent, most of the topics will be based around the men's team for the remainder of this year. All right, on to the final topics or final thoughts of the week. And there were some good ones for American soccer and some dark clouds for others. On a positive note, last Sunday we witnessed Ethan Horvath and Nottingham Forest win the decisive English Championship promotion playoff match to see themselves move up into the Premier League for the first time since 1999, which if I can point out, Manchester City was not even in the Premier League that season. So, a huge moment for Horvath, and as he was actually subbed on in the 89th minute due to an injury to their starting goalkeeper, he got some playing time, which was pretty cool for him. In addition, there's Alex Mighton, who also plays for Nottingham Forest, and just this week, despite representing the English youth national teams, he filed a one-time switch to join the USA. He is just 20 years old, born in Connecticut, and most likely isn't ready to jump straight into our senior team, but definitely will be someone to keep an eye out for with our under-23s in the near future. On the negative end of that was Dwayne Holmes in the losing effort as his Huddersfield team couldn't match Nottingham Forest with the late equalizer, and he will have to wait to try again next season for that promotion opportunity. Staying in the dark cloud, Charlotte FC dropped a 2-1 road loss to Seattle on Sunday night, and by Tuesday morning made news by firing their head coach, Miguel Angel Ramirez, in a shocking move. Not often does an expansion side have that kind of success that Charlotte's having, nor does it fire their head coach after 14 matches, but something behind the scenes had to have happened. Charlotte promoted an assistant coach for the remainder of the season, and as I mentioned earlier, that also allowed Brian to get promoted to the head goalkeeping coach as well. In better news, the U.S. under-20 team is preparing for their 2022 CONCACAF U-20 championship in Honduras and named a provisional roster of 57 players. Yes, 57 players that will be pushing for a place on the final roster. The CONCACAF U-20 Championship serves as a qualification for the Under-23 World Cup and the 2024 Summer Olympics. 44 of the 57 players on the roster play in MLS or USL clubs. A few players to highlight on this provisional roster is Gabriel Slonina, Cade Cowell, Justin Shea, Jonathan Gomez, Kevin Paredes, and Caden Clark, all who have seen time with the senior national team. It also features Brennan Aronson's little brother Paxton as well, so definitely a group with a lot of potential here. Their tournament starts on June 18th and will run through July 3rd. And finally, this falls into American soccer because it will determine who the U.S. men play in their first match in Qatar on November 21st. And on Wednesday evening in Scotland, Ukraine's national team came out 3-1 winners over Scotland in an emotional match for the entire squad and the entire country of Ukraine. Ukraine moves on to the final playoff match for European qualifying against Wales that will take place on Sunday, June 3rd at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. The Ukrainian supporters in attendance in Scotland was absolutely unbelievable. And while they would present one of the biggest challenges for the U.S. team should they win on Sunday, I think the world is pulling for them to beat Wales, and I will be making sure I'm watching and cheering on Sunday as well. Well, that's it for today's episode. A great victory and performance against Morocco really set the stage for a positive summer for the U.S. men. I am looking forward to the next friendly against Uruguay on Sunday. With that being said, I will be covering Sunday's match from Asheville, North Carolina, Beer City, USA. So I plan to have a lot of fun and enjoy lots of pints during my visit. For the next episode, we will be recapping the performance against Uruguay and we'll jump into both of the Nations League matches that will be played June 10th and 14th. So, thanks again for the continued support, and as I keep mentioning, please follow me on social media, as the more likes, shares, subscribers, favorites, views, and downloads of the podcast that I can get, the more likely someone is to join and record an episode or interview with me. And I know we're ready to get some more people to speak on here. Lastly, thanks one more time to Salty Turtle Beer Company for allowing me to feature them this week and for the support in this week's episode. Surf City in the Topsail area is such a cool spot with a great vibe and great people. So plan a visit and go check Salty Turtle out. Until next time, cheers, my friends.